Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened,
a weekly podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season.
Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that Bacon and his men had returned from their mission of defeating the Susquehannock. The Okanichi tribe had actually been the ones to do it, but the people were now safe.
While they were away, Governor Berkeley had asked his council what he should do to make the people in Virginia happy with him.
His council advised him that what the people wanted was new elections for the assembly.
The people had long considered the assembly to be nothing more than puppets chosen using election fraud by the governor.
And there hadn't even been an election in 15 years. It was time. So, by the time Bacon's army returned from the forest, elections were well underway. The majority of the new assembly was made up of Bacon's supporters. Bacon himself was elected as a member of the assembly. Now, all that was left was actually setting foot in Jamestown. Bacon knew this would be dangerous. Even though he was elected to the assembly, he and his men had been declared outlaws, rebels, traitors. The governor had written to him, giving him the option of either submitting and apologizing in front of everyone, or going to trial. Bacon was finally convinced to go to Jamestown, and when he arrived, he had 50 armed men with him. They anchored their boat a bit a ways from Jamestown and sent word to the governor that they were there. They asked if he would be allowed to enter the town. The governor responded by firing on them from one of the forts along the river. He then ordered men to hop into their own ships and pursue Bacon and his men down the James River. Bacon was finally caught the next day and forced to surrender. Then he was brought, as a prisoner, before the governor. When Bacon was out fighting with the natives, Governor Berkeley had told Bacon's wife that he wouldn't hesitate to hang her husband once he got his hands on him. But seeing as almost the entire colony was in support of Bacon, as was almost the entire elected side of the assembly, it wouldn't be possible for the governor to do this. Not only would the assembly not allow him to do so, there was also a very real fear that the people in Virginia would revolt and burn the colony to the ground if he did. In fact, when Bacon had been captured, a horde of angry men descended upon Jamestown and threatened terrible retaliation if any harm were to come to Bacon. So the governor had to make peace. Now, when the governor was face to face with the mighty rebel leader, he lifted his face and his arms to the heavens and proclaimed, "Now I behold the greatest rebel that ever was in Virginia." He then asked Bacon if he was still a gentleman, and that if he were still a gentleman, he would be allowed to go free. Bacon said, yes, he was still a gentleman, and so the governor released him on the gentleman's word that he would not rebel again. In addition to this, the governor restored Bacon to his position on the governor's council. So now, Bacon sat in both the governor's council side of the assembly and the elected side of the assembly. A few days later, Bacon was led before the assembly, where he got down on one knee and humbly submitted his obedience to the governor. The governor forgave him in front of everybody, and when someone from the assembly shouted, "What about all the men who were with him?" the governor forgave them too. The rebels who had been captured with Bacon were freed, and it was publicly declared that Bacon was made the official leader of Virginia's military in the war with the natives. This was what the people wanted all along. They finally had it. So the rebel army returned home, waiting to be called to arms again. This time with official permission. This time without the threat of being declared a rebel. Now back to the new rebel-supporting assembly. The first thing they did was to address some of the changes that were needed in the government. There were many grievances from people who had accused the government of unnecessary high taxes, corruption, and refusal to listen to the people. A special group was created in the assembly just to hear these complaints. But right when things were getting started, another attack came from the natives. The governor immediately put a stop to the assembly's process of hearing the people's complaints until after the attack could be dealt with. Then he ordered an army of 1,000 men and horses to go out against the attacking natives.
Now was the time for that official permission Bacon had to lead the Virginia military to be used.
But it had been several days, and the governor still hadn't given him that official paper with the governor's signature. So, while he had been promised this permission in front of everyone, he technically hadn't officially received the permission yet. Keeping in mind that Bacon's submission and apology had been forced, and that Governor Berkeley's forgiveness had also been forced, neither of them really saw their submission or forgiveness as real or binding. While waiting for the official paper from the governor, Bacon began to suspect that the governor would not give it to him after all. So he went to Governor Berkeley and told him that his wife was sick and that he needed to leave Jamestown to go visit her. The governor allowed him to do this, but almost immediately realized that it was a mistake. Someone had delivered information to the governor that Bacon's wife was not sick, and that he in fact intended to leave Jamestown to go out and lead another army against the natives. The governor had promised Bacon official permission to do so, but he had not delivered the actual paper yet. So, Bacon was technically in rebellion once again. At once, the governor jumped on his horse and rode out to stop Bacon from leaving. He ordered other men to do the same and to patrol the rivers, but he was too late. Bacon had gone. "Why did I not put him to death when I had the chance?" the governor asked himself. Bacon arrived back in Henrico to meet an eager band of men waiting with arms to fight for him against the natives who were once again attacking them. Entire families had been wiped out since Bacon's army had returned from the forest. They, like Bacon, had been informed that Bacon would have official permission to do it this time. When they learned that the governor had not made good on his promise and that Bacon was once again a rebel without the official papers allowing him to go out and fight, they swore oaths of loyalty to him and promised that if Bacon would lead them to the governor, they would make him give them the official permission, or they would destroy all of Jamestown. So off the rebel army went, some on horses, to Jamestown, ready to force permission to defend themselves or destroy all. Along the way, the soldiers talked of plundering the houses of the wealthy and making the governor's wife trade in her fine gowns for canvas dresses. Word reached the governor that the motley crew of 500 men was headed his way. The governor summoned the Virginia military and ordered the mounting of 4 guns along the fort surrounding the town. The next morning, he went out himself to oversee the mounting of the guns. But his dream of unloading them into the rebel army and once and for all showing the colony who was in charge were not to pass. The 500-man rebel army, with Bacon at their lead, threatened that if any guns were fired on them, they would kill and destroy everything. Despite the governor's burning rage at the army, he understood that firing on them would only bring death and was unlikely to end with Bacon dead. So, he ordered the guns to be dismounted and the military to stand down. He returned to the center of Jamestown and waited for the rebels to arrive. And arrive they did, facing down a 500-man army full of rough, angry men who had their own reasons for rage and who were determined at all costs to get this permission from him. He could hardly resist. But he didn't give it without a fight. When the governor came out to meet them, he declared to Bacon that he was a rebel and a traitor and that he would never have the permission he sought. He then tore open his coat, bared his chest, and shouted, "Here, shoot me! For God, fair mark, shoot!" But Bacon only replied that he was not there to harm the governor. He was there for the permission that he had been promised. Think about that. These men had experienced fighting the natives. They had the weapons. They had the determination. They had the ability. And they would likely win in battle. They also had a leader who had been successful in leading the army in the past. They were being slaughtered in their homes. Nobody was safe. Their government was completely leaving them on their own. And they still acknowledged that they needed the government's permission to fight, even in defense of their own lives against their attackers. The breakup with Britain that would happen just over 100 years later was still, even then, only done as an absolute last resort. Throughout American history, the colonists didn't want to throw Britain off of them, not until it had to be. So here we are, over 100 years before the Revolution, and the clamoring army is demanding that the government give them permission to go out and pursue the attacking natives. Bacon then aimed his speech to the assembly members watching from the windows of the assembly house above. He shouted up to them that they had better make the delivery of the papers fast. On his orders, some of the soldiers cocked their pistols and aimed them at the assembly members, to which the assembly members shouted, "For God's sake, hold your hands." They told him that if he waited a little, they would deliver what he desired. The assembly pressed hard on the governor to sign the papers. The governor knew that the men would kill and plunder the town if he refused. He had no choice. He signed the official permission papers and gave it to Bacon, there, full of rage at the assembly house in front of everyone. The next day, Bacon and his men went before the assembly and refused to accept the papers. We were so close, right? They had the official permission they wanted, but there was another matter to attend to. And this goes to the point of loyalty to England and acknowledging that England had authority over them. What Bacon and his men wanted was the governor to officially declare that actions of Bacon and his men had always been in full loyalty to the king and had never been rebellious. If the governor declared this, it would prevent him from claiming that they were rebels later and putting them all on trial or flat out executing them. Unfortunately, the rebels would find out that this would not, in fact, protect them from such a fate. But, in the meantime, the governor flew into a rage. He said that he would rather die than issue such a declaration. But the assembly wanted to keep their throats intact, and so they once again pressed the governor to give Bacon and his men what they wanted. The governor was finally convinced to do so, and he issued the declaration saying that Bacon and the other rebels had always been acting legally and were never rebels to begin with. Copies of the declaration were taken out to parts of Virginia and read aloud to the people so that all would know it. On top of this, to what must have been one of the most difficult things the governor ever had to do, a letter was written to the king stating the contents of the declaration. This must have been humiliating for him. He looked up to the king and had always sought his approval. Now, he was saying that those rebels he had written about to the king before were actually just a confusion on his part. They were not rebels at all. On top of that, several of Governor Berkeley's friends were imprisoned by the new assembly. Once the matter of the declaration was taken care of, Bacon then launched into a speech that lasted for almost an hour. In this speech, he demanded the changes the people had been asking for. He wanted an end to high taxes, an end to corruption, and an end to fraud in the elections. At the end of his speech, the assembly informed him that while he had been gone in Henrico, raising his 500-man army, those changes had already been passed by laws in the assembly. Bacon's laws, as they were called, made it illegal for any person in the government to hold more than one position at a time. This meant that judges couldn't also be police, and that assembly members couldn't also be judges, or tax collectors, and so forth. A little ironic considering that Bacon was serving on both the governor's council and in the elected side of the assembly. Bacon's laws also made it so that no man could serve as sheriff for more than two terms. And church officials who controlled the areas where their churches were, including the raising of taxes in those areas, now had to be elected instead of chosen by the government. The power of the courts was lessened as well, and the right to vote was extended to free men who didn't own land. The issue of taxes was perhaps one of the greatest concerns of the people. As we've discussed in this series, right from the beginning of Virginia's history, the very first permanent English settlement in the Americas, the king had given the settlers the promise that no taxes could ever be taken from the people without the people voting on those taxes. This meant that people voted to elect people, and those elected people would decide the taxes. This is how it was in England as well. The right had been reasserted again and again in America and would not be let go of by anyone for any reason. It was, in fact, the legal basis for which the revolution rested on in the century following this. One of the other issues involving taxes was that the people of Virginia now were claiming that the judges were declaring taxes. These judges had been chosen by the governor and had not been elected. Bacon's laws put it to a stop. From now on, people were to be elected to sit with each of those judges when taxes were decided in the court. Therefore, when judges ordered new taxes, the people had a voice in it. In addition to this, members of the governor's council were no longer exempt from paying taxes. As for the fraud in the elections, a law was made that any policeman found guilty of intimidating voters or of making sure only the votes the governor wanted returned were returned they would be charged a fine of 20,000 pounds of tobacco. These laws were passed by an assembly largely in support of the changes, but signed by a governor who was under the threat of violence and death if he didn't sign it. So Bacon was pretty happy to find out that these laws, Bacon's laws, had already been passed when he was in Henrico. When the assembly was done and they closed up shop, word came that the natives were once again raiding homes and murdering families up and down Virginia. 8 people had been killed. Bacon immediately gathered his army and headed out to protect the people from danger. Even though the governor had been forced to give Bacon the permission to go out and do this, and he didn't consider it binding, he knew that most of the colony supported Bacon, and he therefore made no attempt to stop them. Bacon assured his army of his loyalty to the king. He said that it was, quote, the cries of his brethren's blood that pushed him to lead them.
He then took an oath of loyalty to the king and required his men to swear an oath of loyalty to him as their military leader.
Volunteers poured in and added to the great army. Then the great army headed out to fight the natives who were attacking them. But this is where something strange happened. Some of the governor's friends in the assembly had written an official letter to the governor. The letter was written on behalf of some of the people in Gloucester County, Virginia. The letter stated that Bacon had taken weapons from the people of Gloucester County, and they asked the governor to protect them from him. The governor jumped on this at once and granted them this protection. This was his chance to go back on what he had done. He declared that Bacon was, in fact, a rebel, and that because the permission to fight had been given to Bacon by force, it wasn't valid. He rode out on horseback straight to Gloucester County to assemble an army to go out against Bacon and stop them once and for all, this time with the people at his side. It's true that Bacon's men had plundered the farms of some of the colonists as they went along, and it's also true that nobody dared resist them. But when the governor got to Gloucester County, he found that only a few people knew about the letter, and that when those few people found out that getting the governor's protection from Bacon meant that they themselves had to go out and fight Bacon's army, they broke up and decided to stay out of the whole thing. To add further injury, when the small group of men in Gloucester County broke up, they walked away shouting, "Bacon! Bacon! Bacon!" To this, the governor responded by riding away to an area of Virginia that was more loyal to the governor, but not before fainting in his saddle from sheer exhaustion. When he awoke, he continued his journey. As he rode, he attempted to gather volunteers to form an army that would fight against Bacon's army. He was unsuccessful in this, and people were actually pretty outraged that he was planning on attacking Bacon while Bacon was out fighting those that the governor should be fighting. When word reached Bacon that the governor planned on betraying him and attacking him from behind, he had to change all of his plans. He immediately sounded the drums of war and called everyone together. He delivered a speech to his army in which he said that the governor would rather see them murdered and left to the mercy of those who would butcher them than allow them to defend themselves.
He told them that once again the governor had declared them to be rebels and traitors.
He asked, quote, "Was there ever heard of such wickedness and inhumanity?" He then said that the governor and those who side with him are nothing but cowards, and that they would all see that the governor's men wouldn't dare to meet us in battle. The men declared that they would rather die fighting than surrender and be hanged as rebels. They decided that it would be better to attack the governor now rather than wait for the governor to attack them when they're in battle with the natives. To this, everyone agreed, and they gathered their weapons and set out to find and battle with the governor. But the governor would be hard to get to. When he had found little success in gathering his army around Gloucester County, he moved east to an area that was not only loyal to the governor, but was also across a great river. It would be nearly impossible for Bacon's army to reach him. As for the rest of the governor's supporters, they too fled from the towns and settled in the east, across the great river with the governor. Any who remained pledged their loyalty to Bacon. This left Bacon as the unquestioned ruler of the entire colony. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss how Bacon was now in control of the entire colony and the governor's fight to gain it back. See you next time on Why Wars Happened.